This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 302 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend and good brother, Liam. Liam, we're continuing here for the final time this month, at least, with a review of Batman the Animated Series. It's been a great month. We've had a lot of memorable, great episodes that we've covered here. We've done Riddler's Reform, we've done Second Chance, we even shined the bright DCAU spotlight onto the Dick Grayson Robin character for our 300th episode. It's been a fun month, and this week's episode is certainly apropos to continue that legacy of we're going to always remember March of 2024 as the month that we covered all of these bangers after bangers after bangers. Or that, either that, or we're going to forget immediately next month what we did last month. But either way, it's been a memorable one, and we're continuing with another great episode this week. Certainly one that typically ranks fairly high on those listicles of people's as one of the best, if not the best, episode of the entire series.
That's right. We are jumping into the episode Harley's Holiday. This episode is almost like a brand unto itself. There's statues, there's merchandise specifically based on this particular episode itself, much less as a part of this larger animated series. So Harley's Holiday, a lot to get into with this one, and we don't want to waste too much time, but of course we must first remind you, Cal, we got to hit us with that air date, and let us know who's bringing us this podcast this week.
That's right, man. You know how to set somebody up for a great spike here. We, of course, are going to get our IMDb synopsis from Liam in just a second, as he always does. But as he mentioned, we'll remind you this episode originally aired here in the United States on Fox Kids programming block on October the 15th, 1994, which means we have not yet reached the 30th anniversary of this episode. We remarked before we went on the air, it's pretty late in the air date run here. So deep into 1994 with this episode. And of course, as you mentioned, Liam, this episode synopsis is brought to you by the Pod Tower. We invite you to head over today and subscribe to youtube.com/thepodtower. If you subscribe there, you will get not only our entire podcast library from the very first episode all the way up and including this very episode, in addition to every single bonus episode we've ever done, all in one convenient streaming platform. But you also get two additional DCAU themed podcasts from the good folks at the Watchtower Database with their Jump on the Batwagon podcast and the entire Tim Talk podcasts from start to finish. Again, all in one convenient streaming location. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Harley's Holiday, which is written by Paul Dini, directed by Kevin Altieri, music by Lolita Ritmanis, and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. On her first day of release, Harley Quinn gets into a ridiculous amount of trouble in record time.
I mean, it's not inaccurate, and it's actually kind of funny and goes along with the theme of the episode being a bit of a comedy. So I will take it. I don't think I would give it much higher than maybe a C plus or a B minus, but it gets the job done, and it made me chuckle.
Agreed.
So as the aforementioned IMDb synopsis so eloquently put, it is indeed the episode is opened up as we are at the old Arkham Asylum, and Harley is sitting at the desk along with the doctor. Who's the doctor's name? I always forget. Oh, Leland, not Vreeland, Leland. We got a Vreeland and a Leland in this episode. So Dr. Leland is breaking the good news to Harley in that they believe that she is therapeutically cured at this point and is due for her release. And Harley does all that she can to keep herself calm, cool, and collected, but just can't help but celebrate. And just as she is receiving this notice from the doctor that she is due her release the very next day, Batman and Robin are walking in, leading in a very, very belligerent Scarecrow who is shouting things and screaming. And it's a very funny bit because he's screaming all these things about how they should cower in fear of the God of Fear and all of this. And then Harley sees them leading him in and says, "Hey, Dr. Crane," and he stops speaking and says, "Hello, my child," and then goes back to berating them with this insane dialogue.
That's
so
okay. You have every reason to be proud of yourself.
Unhand me.
I just wish the other inmates could make your sort of progress.
I am the master of fear, the lord of despair. Cower before me in witless terror.
Hi, Professor Crane.
Good evening, child.
Worship me, fools! Worship me! Scream hosannas of anguish to Scarecrow, the all-terrible god of fear!
I think he's getting better.
As they continue, Batman stops and congratulates her on her soon-to-be release date and extends a hand out to her, but lets her know that he'll be watching and that she just needs to keep her nose clean and stay out of trouble. And she says, no worries, that's all behind her now. Her days of crime are behind her, and she's going to show the world she's just as sane as anybody else. And we'll talk about it, I'm sure, in visuals and animation. But the cuts in this episode are just so funny. Everything is just punctuated with hilarious dialogue, punctuated by it following up immediately with a hilarious visual. And this one's no exception. Is we get her saying she's just as sane as anybody, and then we cut to her on the streets in Gotham with people running away, screaming in terror as she is being led down the street wearing roller skates, a tied up shirt, and booty shorts with the two hyenas, Bud and Lou, pulling her along the sidewalk. And Bud and Lou are doing nothing short of terrorizing the citizens of Gotham. And Harley just seems to be, she's like the prototypical dog owner that is just completely oblivious. She has no idea what her dogs are doing. She's just enjoying life, enjoying the warm summer day, and totally oblivious that they are terrifying the citizens of Gotham. She stops on the street, again, completely oblivious to the fact that the citizens are upset over these wild animals that are trying to attack their groceries and take their food from them. She looks in one of the shopping windows and notices and thinks that maybe her clothes may be a bit out of date. So she decides to do what else but go on a little shopping trip.
I knew I shouldn't have worn this outfit. It's so out of style, it's growing mold. I probably look like a total geek. Come on, babies. We're going shopping.
So she, Bud, and Lou decide to enter a department store where they're going to get herself a new wardrobe. She sort of has this monologue with the saleswoman who tells her she can't bring Bud and Lou in, but she reminds them that don't worry, they're house trained, and continues about her shopping spree. In the midst of this, we find out that she's not the only person at this department store on this very day, but joining her is happens to be one billionaire Bruce Wayne and Veronica Vreeland, who Veronica apparently is not happy with the fact that Bruce, every one of Bruce's suits is brown, brown and yellow with a yellow shirt. So she even goes so far as to mock Bruce as they're trying on the clothes. She gets him this beautiful like blue suit, the sky blue
pastel. Yeah,
it's a nice like Easter color, like. And Bruce is not buying it. And she even goes as far as to mock him and ask him who dresses him, if she allows or if he allows Alfred to dress him. And Bruce is sort of blushing. He hears the commotion, and in the commotion, Harley being continually dragged around by Buttonlose, still wearing the roller skates, by the way, trips over something and flies into the waiting arms of Bruce Wayne, whom she thinks looks somewhat familiar, and even notices his chin seems to be the most familiar part of his face, but then recognizes him as billionaire Bruce Wayne. After Bruce has played down that they don't know each other. But she picks out a new dress while she's there. She mentions Veronica, as she's flirting with Bruce, by the way. Veronica steps up and sort of intervenes. Harley mistakes, her, as perhaps a jealous girlfriend, but also recognizes Veronica.
Wow, I never saw them do that before. Hey, know you?
I don't think so.
Something about that chin. I know. You're Bruce Wayne, the boy billionaire. Unattached, I see.
May I help you, miss?
Uh-oh. Enter the jealous girlfriend. Hey, remember me? That big charity bash a few years back? The one the Joker robbed? I was the clown girl holding the gun on ya. Oh, don't worry. I'm over the crime thing, see? I'm rehabilitated and ready to live my life right.
How nice for you. Goodbye.
Gee, you make one little mistake and they never let you forget.
Veronica shrinks back in terror, but Harley is quick to produce her certificate of sanity out of her purse, notating that she is 100% sane. It's got a stamp across the front of it with big red letters that says sane. Could not be more cartoonishly hilarious. She shoves it back in her purse and skates away, continuing her monologue, noting that she's ready to start out on a straight and narrow path, that maybe someone like her can turn over a new leaf. She's kind of monologuing with this saleswoman who sells her the dress, but Harley pays for it in cash. And as she skates off, she unfortunately was not able to get the security tag off before leaving the store, which sets off the alarm and sets off what I dare say is a series of unfortunate events for Miss Harlene Quinzel.
Yeah, I would say so. So she goes to leave. The little alarms, I should know. I worked retail. I should know what those things are called. But the little things that go off when you're attempting to walk out of the store and the things that register that you haven't paid.
The sales sensors or something?
I think that makes sense. Yeah, whatever those little alarm sensors are by the sliding doors. They start to go off and the security guard comes running after her, and Harley immediately gets very agitated and freaks out, trying to protest and claiming that she did pay.
Hold it.
I didn't do anything.
That's a security alarm. Just give me back.
That's my dress. I paid for it fair and square.
I know. Just let me remove the security tag.
It's a frame-up, a fix. You ain't taking me back to the slam it, John Law.
What in heaven?
Stay here.
The security guard believes her and is just trying to remove the little plastic security tag that is still hanging off of the dress, and that she didn't allow the cashier to remove either. But Harley just won't hear it. She's panicking, begins trying to fight the guy, and then calls in the hyenas to attack him. And even in the melee, there's a couple of the mannequins get thrown through the front window of the department store. So Bruce makes an excuse to go back in and check on things, tries to track down Harley in the changing area, where she is back in the full jester outfit and is as she puts it, well armed, as she has a mannequin arm and begins to beat Bruce over the head with it. It's a very funny scene. We'll talk more about that in visuals, certainly. But she runs out. She's still got the roller skates on, too, which
yes. is good.
So she's roller skating through the hyenas are still attacking the security guard. She runs out. She sees Veronica waiting in this convertible where she was waiting for Bruce and dives right into the front seat, tackling Veronica into the car, and then calls the hyenas into the car with her, and they go speeding off, in the process angering one of the first sort of wacky races style chasers she'll have for this episode, as she causes a bit of a traffic accident, including having Harvey Bullock swerve off and crash his car for the first time. So Bullock goes off chasing after him, and Batman and Robin will not be too far behind here. We then cut to Gordon's office, where we see a gentleman in full military regalia, including like the helmet and everything, just stomping around Jim Gordon's office, demanding some answers as to what happened. Gordon again tries to stick up for Harley, says that she must have just been confused and panicked and is terrified of going back to Arkham, and he is trying to urge restraint. The general, who we find out is actually Veronica's father, actually just recently reappeared in some of the Adventures Continue comics last year. But two years ago now, I think that was season two. But he kind of freaks out on Gordon a little bit and knocks over Gordon's coffee before seemingly composing himself and just asking Gordon to do all he can to get his little girl back. And Gordon agrees and walks out of the office. Though right as he does, the general gets on the phone and declares a code red situation to whoever is on the other line.
The most stereotypically military man.
Yeah, I think there's a specific influence. I'll talk about it in visuals. But yes, it's very... just very over the top. And yes, he declares code red as we cut there to Harley with Veronica and Doe has made a decision. She's going to try to get out of town to avoid Batman or the police tracking her down.
Please, Miss Clown, call me Harley. Everyone does. Please, Harley, let me go. I'm rich. I'll pay whatever you want if you'll just... Uh-oh, company.
Stop the car, now!
I think not.
We want to help you sort this out before it gets worse.
Sure, like you helped poor Professor Crane last night. Sorry, boys, you ain't taking me back to Arkham.
And so she heads off to old Boxy Bennett, who we previously saw in Harlequinade.
A Paul Dini creation, you would assume. Or
yeah, I mean, he wrote the first episode with him in it too, so.
Right. It's one of those things that we talk about where Paul Dini loves, like, he creates these little characters and he just loves reusing them again, so it was absolutely cool to see him pop up.
Yes, it's very much in the way of like, well, it could have just been any mob guy or another character, but no, make it the same mob guy from the previous episode. It's more fun that way, to have that little extra bit of continuity. But yes, Boxy isn't quite so happy about the idea of helping Harley after the events of Harlequinade, where she brought Batman and Robin down on him and got his casino busted up. But she gives him a little kiss and lets him know that she's gonna be she'll be friendly if he'll be friendly, so to speak. And Boxy is agreeable to that and decides they're gonna ransom off Veronica and figure out what to do about getting Harley out of town later. But Harley is having a little bit of a crisis of conscience still and doesn't want to ransom off Veronica, because she actually does want to go straight. She actually does want to live a normal life and just wants to get out of town and let Veronica go back to her life when she's done. Boxy's not so sure about that. And as he tries to threaten both of the women, Batman and Robin come in for some fisticuffs here. Again, we'll talk about the sequence more in visuals for sure, but they have a bit of a dust up with all of the thugs and Boxy as well. Boxy seemingly has Harley dead to rights, but then she calls in the hyenas once again, and they really take him apart. And so she grabs Veronica in the melee, and she and Veronica escape in the convertible on the way. as Batman, Robin, and Boxy are left in the lurch a little bit. And so as Harley and Veronica speed away, they have a little bit of a heart to heart, and Harley promises that she's going to release Veronica once she figures out how to get out of town. And at that moment, as they have a moment of peace, as they both seem to relax a little bit, there's suddenly a very large explosion next to their car. And what do we see in the background, in the rearview mirror, but Veronica's father on a giant tank coming towards them, demanding she release the hostage and firing tank rounds at her. There might be a metaphor for like U.S. foreign military intervention in here somewhere, but yes, there's now a tank hot on the trail, and Harley is not so willing to reunite Veronica with her dad just yet.
That's right, Veronica. The line that Veronica gives of "That's my dad," and then Harley said, "No, that's not your dad. That's your dad in a tank." Boxy has also been in hot pursuit. It's a wild goose chase, as we also have Harvey Bullock, who's speaking of just the worst day ever. You know, Harley later on talks about having a bad day. Everybody else in this episode could also chalk this up to having a bad day. Boxy's having a bad day. Like, everything was fine. He was at his fish market, like playing craps with his gang of creepy men. And then all of a sudden Harley shows up and upsets the apple cart, and suddenly he's missing his pants and driving a fish truck to try and chase after her. Harvey Bullock has been trying to catch Harley since the initial incident at the department store, and his automobile keeps getting crushed or crashed into or destroyed in various different ways. And now, of course, we have the tank in pursuit of Harley. So Harley turns around in the completely opposite direction of the tank, headed back towards the city. Boxy, who's been chasing her, catches on that she's turned around, turns around to chase her. The tank goes completely off the side of the of the overpass and down to chase Harley as well. And then Bullock also in pursuit at this point, as you mentioned. One of the tank rounds hits and nearly while Harvey was in pursuit, an 18-wheeler spun around and turned his nice sedan into a car without a top, say a convertible at that point. So he's been stuck after he ran into a fire hydrant. He gets on the radio. They hear that that Harley's been spotted. He was changing his tires. Somehow his car is able to move enough, even though it's losing pieces as it drives down the road. He's also in hot pursuit. And wouldn't you know, Batman and Robin in the Batmobile, also now a part of the chase, as they catch up to Harley, who can't believe her luck. She heads towards Gotham City Square, which is stand-in or is, depending on. I bet if we had a friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, on the show, he would probably just go ahead and say this is Times Square. Mm-hmm. It's Times Square. They head towards Gotham City Square, and there's a convergence at that point with Harley. She does mention. And have this conversation. I think you may have mentioned it, but Veronica promises that as long as she gets home safe, she's going to drop any charges against Harley. And Harley kind of sees that as a good thing and as an opportunity, sort of a silver lining to the mess that she's facing. And as I mentioned, Harley eventually sees the Batmobiles caught up, pops a Huey, and she eventually just stops her car in the middle of Gotham City Square as the three or four points of all of these people that are chasing her converge at once. The tank shows up, Boxy shows up, and Harvey Bullock all show up at the same time, converging on this one little car. And the tank just rides over the car and crushes everybody. They all smash into one super exciting car and tank crash.
Making clown. Veronica?
Hey, Bird Boy, look alive! Oh! Well, that's my good deed for the day. Bye!
Wait!
And Veronica's dad looks down in horror. Batman and Robin are also horrified as Boxy gets out of the car to investigate. And just then, from up above, Harley gets Robin's attention and drops Veronica into his waiting arms. And she's escaped by climbing up onto some of the billboards in the area. And that leads us to our next part of the episode, which is a funny little chase sequence that happens. Batman chases her up onto the roof. Boxy tries to get away, by the way, but ultimately is apprehended by Harvey Bullock.
I don't want to undercut this because it's so funny. Yeah, Boxy tries to run away. We'll talk about it. He's in his boxer shorts, red-hearted boxer shorts, like a complete Looney Tunes character.
Yep.
And Robin ties him up. And Boxy, who has just been in a head-on collision with a cop and was trying to commit vehicular manslaughter, is like, you got nothing on me. Dummy. It's so funny, though. Like, it's such a great gag. And Bullock walks up and grabs him by the collar and says, I think I can figure something out. And takes him away to be arrested. It's like the idea of saying, you got nothing on me right after you were in a head-on collision with a five-star general and a cop.
Yeah, we're moments away from talking about Paul Dini's absolutely off-the-wall insane writing for this episode. As we wrap it up here, Batman chases Harley up onto the rooftops where he, this whole time, he's been trying to encourage her to simply stop and see if they can sort out the misunderstanding, because he's been rooting for her from the beginning and is trying to empathize and be compassionate towards her and trying to understand the situation, and sees that it's a domino effect of things that have occurred on that day that have just escalated everything, and he's trying to stop the dominoes from falling, so to speak. And Harley just unfortunately won't listen to him. So they're on this rooftop, and they're jumping from rooftop to rooftop. Some great visuals we'll talk about. Batman smashes into into one of the neon signs, and Harley's on one of the other ones. She said that she boils it down to, she's having a bad day.
You're the one to quit, do you?
Listen to me. All the work you've done, your freedom. If you run away, you'll lose them, Harley. You're so close to winning back your real life. Why risk it now?
I'm having a bad day. I'm sick of people trying to shoot me, run me over, and blow me up! I didn't even get to keep my new dress! And I actually paid for it! Be good. I really did. But if that's not good enough, fine. Let's get back to basics.
Which, of course, is a great callback to The Killing Joke, Alan Moore's legendary Joker story, where he's the Joker has just one bad day, and that's ultimately what leads to him becoming the Joker. Harley says she's having a bad day. And that she's tired of being attempted to be run over, killed, shot at, and list the litany of things that she's already experienced that day. She said, but if things are going to be just what they are, then, she's going to return to her roots and go back and play the hits. So she pulls out a Joker grenade and gets ready to throw it at a incapacitated Batman who's still recovering from running into a giant neon mouth. And it is at that point that Batman realizes it, thinks quickly, and throws a batarang, knocking it out of her hand, which causes the grenade to land behind the billboard that Harley is on. She is hanging on for dear life, falls off of that, lands into another billboard that is a child eating off of a spoon. The spoon launches her onto a bottle of Coca-Cola that is another neon billboard. She's hanging on to the straw of the glass bottle of Coca-Cola and says, "Talk about grasping at straws," and begins to fall, but Batman is able to swoop in and save her at the last second. And it's determined at that point that unfortunately Harley's headed back to her old stomping grounds of Arkham Asylum at this point.
That's right. So we get a little postscript scene to end the episode, very similar, only this time instead of Scarecrow, it's Harley being led back into Arkham in cuffs. But once again, Dr. Leland is there to meet her and it tries to encourage Harley and tells her that it's only a small setback thanks to Veronica not pressing any charges on her, and that if she really does the work, that she could be back out and free in no time. And Batman and Harley have a little heart-to-heart here, and she asks why Batman was so intent on giving her second, third, and fourth chances when she's done nothing but cause him trouble over the years. And as you alluded to here, Cal, it's the whole point of the episode. He tells her that he understands what it's like to try to rebuild your life after after a tragic event.
Home again, jiggity jig.
Not for too long, though. Miss Vreeland dropped the kidnapping charges. With a little more hard work, you should be ready to re-enter society for good.
Yay. There's one thing I gotta know. How'd you stay with me all day, risking your butt for someone who's never given you anything but trouble?
I know what it's like to try and rebuild a life. I had a bad day, too, once.
Nice guys like you shouldn't have bad days.
So he pulls out the dress that she had bought for herself but didn't get to wear back at the department store. She's so elated, she kisses him once and then enjoys herself enough that she's going to go back in for a second one as Robin and Poison Ivy. I love this cutaway to Robin and Poison Ivy just standing there looking at it. And then as she finishes up and is being led into her cell, she tells Batman to give her a call and he tells her not to press her luck. And we get a little postscript there as Robin and Batman walk out of the asylum and Harley goes to her cell. She stops and looks at Poison Ivy and tells her to mind her own business and then walks away. And that's the end of our episode. It's a really quirky, again, very, very Looney Tunes style way to even end the episode too. So
yeah, I was surprised we didn't just do the closeout circle fade yes. out there.
Would have
on Harley or Ivy at that point.
100%. We were just missing that, but yeah, it's a fun little bit at the end of her telling Ivy off a little bit as she walks back into her cell. So that's where we wrap it up. As we've already alluded to quite a bit here, Cal. Oh my goodness, this episode is so fun and it's so silly, and it's like I said, it feels like there's a lot of Looney Tunes, a lot of Chuck Jones, Tex Avery, screwball cartoon comedy in this. There's like maybe some wacky racist stuff with all the different guys, and I think there's a movie. I'm trying to think. I was thinking like Blues Brothers kept coming to mind because there's the scene at the end of that first movie, I think, where there's like 100 cop cars all crash at the end of that movie. I don't know if that's a specific influence. I'm sure there's other movies that scene I think is like lampooning another movie too. So I if you know if there's a specific homage here that we're missing, please hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at DCAU Review and let us know. But I think this is so much fun. The weird chasing with all the different people chasing Harley, the idea that spirals out of control because she forgot to take this or let the security guard take the tag off of her dress. And she just freaks out and immediately calls in a pair of hyenas to attack him. Like, there's just so much. It's so screwy and funny in this episode. It's it's just a delight.
It is. Yeah. It's nonstop from beginning to end. There's a lot of funny visuals we'll talk about, but the direction went hand in hand with the writing. Mr. Deeney, we've talked about it before, to be able to run the gamut in like the style of writing. He can write such deep, thought-provoking, tragic, heartstring-pulling stories, mm-hmm. and he can also write just the goofiest, off-the-wall comedic takes on things, and it's the dichotomy of man, two sides, you know, same brain and two completely different styles of storytelling coming out of his head. Just wow, what an immense talent is all that I came away with thinking about after this episode, because it's absolutely true. Like what an incredible, it's just a fun, goofy take on the story. Obviously, he being one of the co-creators of this character, Harley, mm-hmm. understands this character in such a deep way, because it came from his brain. Like, this is what he had in mind. And it's interesting because you can see some of the influence in this if you saw what ultimately is probably a forgettable movie, but at the time I did not dislike the movie, but the Birds of Prey movie, the Harley mm-hmm. Quinn Birds of Prey, there's some of the very same elements of that, like
absolutely
of this very episode in that characterization in that movie. So the going back and seeing this years later, after Harley has become such a focal point and popular figure in the DC universe, both in live action, comics, all of the trip that she's been on, this is quite the, the kickoff point for this character to not only, this is her first appearance essentially as a standalone character. Joker doesn't show up one bit. That was something that was very interesting to me, that you could have done the Joker as the person she goes to hide out with, but instead she picks Boxy mm-hmm. instead. So you're deliberately keeping the spotlight shining on her for this episode, allowing her to be the focal point and not be overshadowed by the most famous supervillain of all time, and letting her stand on her own. Just a brilliant choice. And then just the way that things spiral out of control here, and just you see the dominoes fall, and you, while it's comedic, there is a bit of tragedy to it, as we talked about. Like, this character, just she's doing her best, like she's trying her best, and who can't relate to just having that day where just everything seems to be going wrong, and like the decision, and finally just at the end of it, you're just ready to give up, you're just like, screw it, it doesn't matter, like it, things are not gonna change, nothing's gonna be different. You wake up, you're like, today's gonna be different, I'm gonna, you know, get up on this side of the bed, I'm mm-hmm. gonna exercise, I'm gonna eat clean, and then right as soon as you get to work, somebody yells at you, you know, you get into a fender bender in the parking lot, you know, you forgot your lunch, it just, the stuff stacks up, and just by 3 o'clock you're just like, I'm done I'm just gonna go eat Taco Bell and be sad. Just me? No,
absolutely. I think everyone that's like January 2nd every year, right? everybody goes through that. But yeah, it is funny, as much as we talk about, as much as the comedy is so over the top, and we'll certainly talk about that in visuals as well. You know, there's like four car crashes in this episode, and all these over the top explosions and silliness. Even the end, when like Harley drops the grenade and the whole billboard explodes. It's like the action, even the action is so over the top. It's almost like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon or something. But it also has this very kind of sweet heart and soul to it, from, you know, everyone, really almost everyone, even Veronica, is very understanding of Harley. And you know, you see Dr. Leland, you see Batman and Robin, you see Commissioner Gordon, you know, all of these people want to give her the benefit of the doubt, are trying to you know, take it easy on her, trying to get her to calm down, but she just has such a, she just panics and freaks out and can't quite hear what anyone is saying to her. Can't quite bring herself to believe what anyone is saying to her. And then that nice little postscript there, where Batman, even now, once she's relapsed, once she's put the clown suit back on and kidnapped a woman and all of this stuff, almost killed him with a grenade, he's still there at the end, and him and Dr. Leland and are still there to tell her that, hey, it doesn't, just because today didn't go well doesn't mean that tomorrow can't. Like, it's a very hopeful and optimistic way to end, and to put that bit of sweetness and heart and compassion into this episode, where you could have just ended it on another joke, right? You could have just ended it with him catching Harley and her saying, "I made a mess on your cape," and like, it would have been still been a great episode.
Yeah.
But I think that little postscript at the end, that final scene, and really bookending it with those two scenes in Arkham, I think it the episode has a really lovely like bit of heart and compassion shown, and I think that, I know that's a hot button issue with how different people view Batman. And again, I don't necessarily think there's a right or a wrong way there's a lot of different versions, but I think
the wrong way is the Batman that kills. I'm just going to controversial stance.
Wow. Actually having a strong opinion about people argue that on the internet.
I'm doing the meme with the guy standing up in the crowd of people, the Norman Rockwell painting of the man standing. Batman killing is a bad thing.
I agree. I generally agree, but it's nice, I think, especially for this version of Batman. And we just talked about it last week in a much more serious episode in Second Chance, but that, you know, he's not just getting, you know, he's not doing this because he gets his jollies out of it. Like, he's not, that's always, you know, again, kind of a flippant, like very, very Reddit, 2010s Twitter take to be like, oh, he just beats on the mentally handicapped people and he doesn't even care about them. He's just a rich kid getting his kicks and all that. It's like, no, he wants these people to get better, and he's encouraging them and doing what he can to facilitate that. And, you know, the physicality, the fisticuffs only come out when it's absolutely necessary. So it's fun to see Batman in this role where he's really, the whole time, even when he's out of the costume and he's Bruce, like, he's trying to reach her and get her to calm down and think logically. And she's just not having it. But even again, once she does screw up, he still is there for her and is still there to encourage her that she could still get better. So I really love that. Like, it's such a nice bit of, this could just be wall-to-wall comedy and it would still be a hoot, but that heart that they give this episode as well, and the way that you see Batman, especially how much he cares and wants the city and Harley individually to get better, is really sweet as well.
Yeah, no, that little underlying story that they're telling, and it starts throughout. I mean, it's from the very beginning. Him shaking her hand and like, hey, I'm going to keep my eye on you, just letting her know that he's going to be watching, but does so as like an encouragement, sort of like the fatherly figure to her. And then, he sees things starting to spiral out of control as Bruce. And he even goes in, you know, hey, you don't want this to go down on your first day out. And he's like trying to encourage her. Then when they're pulling up alongside of her, rather than, you know, shredding the tires on the car or something like that, like we've seen the Batmobile do before, he just pulls alongside her, tries to get her attention, tells her to pull over, that, you know, they want to work things out before things, you know, continue to get crazy. And that happens all the way up until the Times Square stuff. And even then, from the rooftops, he's still trying to get her to just surrender so they can work things out. So the fact that it's mostly a Harley episode, obviously. It's Harley gags, it's Harley interacting with people, but kind of like the sneaky back subplot is that Batman is actually a compassionate character and somebody that truly cares about seeing those that he believes can be reformed. So yeah, it's a great plot. It's funny, I ended up watching this episode twice. I had time enough to watch it twice for before we did our review, and I was the first time I was like, I think I'm gonna give this a 10 out of 10. It's like, but I'll just watch it a second time with more critical eyes. And if something doesn't stand out right, I'm going to call it out. And I was like, nope. 10 out of 10. That's my score for the episode's plot this week. It's a perfect 10 out of 10.
And I am right there with you. I also gave it a 10 out of 10. I just, again, we already talked about it. You already touched on it. Just how well Paul Dini knows Harley's voice. Like, obviously, and again, you could say it's because it's, you know, it's his co-creation, so of course he does, but just there's so many funny lines, and the way that she is so over the top and so screwball, and so she's such a Looney Tunes character to an extent, but also feels like, you know, and we'll talk about this later in voice acting, but again, she still feels like a real person somehow at the same time. Like, it's a weird tightrope that he walks, but yeah, this is a masterpiece.
Absolutely, yeah. This episode even more so, because we get her dialogue. You know, there are sometimes where she seems really sane, but then there's other times where, like, the interaction with Boxy, which is a little bit awkward. They obviously are in this, two females in a very gigantic, brutish, man-centered mm-hmm. area, and they do everything they can to visually intimate what these men are thinking about having these two dames in their presence. And she sticks up, is like, no, we're not going to do anything to Veronica. She's under my protection. We're taking care of her. Like, she shows compassion, and she shows that she's changing through this. So, yeah, it's a brilliant balance of that. And I think ultimately we can probably say what led to her becoming kind of what she is nowadays, which is more of an anti-hero, or, you know, somebody that kind of treads that line and flips back and forth between being a villain or being a villain with a heroic side at times, like a dark comedy hero at times. So yeah, this is laying the foundation for people to then later on in the, you know, in those other runs, kind of create or build upon that same backstory. So yeah, no choice from both of us, and really no surprise that we both gave the plot 10 out of 10.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is animation and visuals. By the way, we're on a five score streak here for the same exact scores. We had all four of our scores last week exactly the same. We're now one for one this week. I'm interested to see how long we can keep this streak going. We've never done it. We've never had the same exact score for the same exact categories 2 weeks straight. So that would be a first if we were going to go that route. So we'll see here as we get into animation and visuals. Dong Yang, responsible for the animation this week. And of course, a good friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, was the director for this week. And I will start with the animation from Dong Yang. Some really cool stuff in this episode, some really great looking things, and I think some really off model and weird looking things was my ultimate sort of breakdown of things there. I love the sequence in Gotham City Square on top mm-hmm. of the rooftops, the neon signs.
Yes.
What a great place to, like, have a final fight between the two of them, just interacting with all of the billboards and the neon mm-hmm. signs. And there was a lot of consistency too. And I can't imagine that would be very easy to do, because the signs, several of the signs are actually animated. So they're moving. So you're creating like a repeating effect of animation in the background, as opposed to it just being a static background with the characters moving in front of it. So I imagine that was probably incredibly difficult to sort of master. And even from scene to scene with different angles of how the characters are standing or what have you, keeping that continuity and consistency of the same billboards, really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. With that said, I think there are times where from scene to scene, the characters look very odd. They don't have the same look from scene to scene. Batman looks very off model at times. That took me out of several scenes, I would say. But then building back on things, I think there's actually a lot of fun, as you mentioned, There's a car crash every 60 seconds, it feels like, in this in this episode. There's some sort of wacky hijinks that's occurring. We can go through and kind of talk about our highlights of the actual, you know, visuals and stuff like that. But what did you think of the overall animation this week from Dongyang?
Yeah, there's some very drastic movements that I feel like we don't normally get in our, when it's just two people talking in this show. Like, it's very over the top, very, you know, animated, for lack of a better term. There's not a lot of, like, there's not any static imagery really in this episode. It's very it moves a lot, and there's a lot of I believe Kevin referred to it as squash and stretch, where you play a little faster and looser with the models to allow them to do more sort of over the top cartoony things.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's for what this episode is, I think that works a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The only things like that took me out, I would say, is Batman's model, very inconsistent. Mm-hmm. That's the thing for me. And we talked about this all the time, but if it was consistent for the whole episode, I think it would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels to me like a lot of the issues with scaling, that like there's a shot when Harley goes up to Bruce in the department store where he looks like he's like 8 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
Uh-huh.
And there's a shot of Batman on the rooftop at the end where he's walking, and his shoulders are so broad and his head is so small that he looked like the lizard guys from the live action Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is like the biggest thing. I thought Batman's model especially was wildly inconsistent. There's little extra detailing. And again, maybe that comes from the influence of doing this more over the top cartoony episode. And all of the females' eyes, They have like a little extra detailing in them, and they're all sort of brightly colored.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yep. They don't necessarily have like the black pupil in the eye. They have like the kind of the white, I guess it's supposed to be like light reflecting in their eyes. Looks a little bit more like Eastern animation as well.
Agreed.
Again, I think I settled into most of it. The only ones I didn't really like as far as is Batman himself, just because it's pretty inconsistent throughout the episode. But it's just, yeah, there's so much good, and like, again, little things like you said, like Bullock's car getting increasingly damaged in every accident, to the point where he's driving away and he drives over the fire hydrant so the water shoots up and you just see parts falling off of the car. Like, it's such a good gag. There's a lot of great like sight gags like that. I already mentioned Boxy in his red heart underwear running around with like his torn up suit jacket is great. The general Vreeland, I'm pretty sure, is based off of the 1970 movie Patton.
Okay.
Played George C. Scott's Patton. That's the "you magnificent bastard, I've read your book." If you know that. You know that famous scene. It's a general with that helmet and those goggles. So
not the general from the insurance company, the American insurance company, right?
No, not. I think maybe this inspired that general. But but yeah. So I think there's like some really fun character designs. Like I said, how Veronica's getting increasingly disheveled as the episode goes on, and like, yep, her hair is getting more frizzy, and like her sleeves are ripped off her dress and all this stuff. Like, it's, there's some really, really great visual gags. The tank driving off like through the median on the bridge and rolling down over the cars, just really good bits of visual comedy all throughout this that enhance an already very funny script.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though the inconsistency with the some of the animation and the models and stuff like that, there were a lot of things that I thought were really impressive. Like we said, like, I don't know, maybe 40% of the episode feels like it's in the car, and they're driving a convertible. Harley's driving a convertible, so the wind has to whip through her like her suit, so you get her pigtails flying behind her in her Harley mask, which is, I don't know, I'm not an animator. I imagine it's probably a little bit easier to animate than hair, but you have Veronica in the car also, who from scene to scene is either in the front or in the back seat, and she has to sit there and they have to animate her hair flying. The Batmobile pulls up next to it. Batman, you know, tries to talk to Harley. The top slides forward on the Batmobile, and Robin's hair is flailing in the wind. As you said, I think there's so many things that feel make this feel like a Tex Avery or a Looney Tune or even a Tiny Toon cartoon or something of the time. And some of the, you know, some of the facial responses that the characters have, some of the character models themselves. I love when Harley decides she's going to go into the department store. They cut to Bud and Lou, who look at each other and they like cock their eyes at each other. Yes. Like, we're going to go in the department store. Like, totally, you know, totally goofy and unrealistic, but like on brand for this is a cartoon, and the cartoon dogs are like, is this woman messing with us? Like, what are we talking about? What is she talking about? We're going into the store.
You're waiting for Mel Blanc or an you know, appropriate era Looney Tunes or Flintstones voice actor to be like, it's a living, like that kind of like, you know, where you cut back to the animal and they're giving her the side eye. Yeah, it's that's a great bit.
That was great. I love, so when she's leaving the store initially, and of course the security guard stops her, she sicks Bud and Lou on them, then she runs back into the dressing room, and we cut back after she's beaten Bruce with the mannequin arm, which of course a perfect Paul Dini gag. He absolutely just, I know, you know, he was cackling to himself about the idea of her grabbing a mannequin arm, saying that she's armed, and then hitting Bruce and assaulting other patrons with that same arm. Like,
it's a joke so great and so perfect for Harley that you're like, how did they wait this long into the series to pull that one out?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it's so good that the recent Mondo Toys 1/6 Harley Quinn figure came with a mannequin arm, and Paul Dini himself on Twitter mentioned you thought it was just hilarious that it came with that and the copy of her certificate saying that she was sane. So, you know, he loves that bit to this day. That, you know, writing that, but as she's leaving and she gets into the convertible and she calls Bud and Lou over, they're still like, you can see the silhouettes of them going after the security guard, and he's like holding them at bay with a mannequin body. I was no good. I was losing it. He's just standing there like jostling at them with this mannequin body that's missing its arms, and they're like trying to hold him at bay. And then Harley calls them into the car. They stop what they're doing and jump in the car. Just so funny. Similarly, you know, when she sicks Bud and Lou on Boxy later on, at the fish market, it's, you know, I think it's the best, it's the preamble to Ace's, show up at, during Return of the Joker, where he's, you know, where Terry sicks him on the Joker during their fight. It's the best sneak up attack that from an animal since then, I'd say, that I've seen. But I love that, as you mentioned, they go crazy. They even like, they cut away and you just hear them sort of mauling him, and then they cut back to him, and he's just kind of like trying to hold them at bay with his arms. He's now disheveled, his whole suit is torn, and then he runs to get in the truck and they pull his pants off. Just like a completely Three Stooges goofy, like hilarious bit with the, you know, the pants coming off at the end. And as you mentioned, of course, he's wearing heart boxers. You couldn't have a cartoon character wearing anything else underneath of it. But I do think, so we don't have a lot of actual fighting or action here, because most of our action takes place as car chases or tank chases towards the end. But the little fight that we get between Batman and Robin and Boxy's men, I think is pretty good. I love Robin's ingenuity. You know, we talked about it last week, a Robin showcase. This week he doesn't quite, I wouldn't call this by any means a Robin showcase episode, but he at least does get to do some cool stuff here in fighting. He grabs a pair of fish and uses them as nunchucks and whacks a couple of guys. Everybody in that scene is getting whacked in the face with fish. All of Bugsy's gang or Boxy's gang get whacked in the face with fish by different. Harley whacks somebody in the face with fish. Robin's whacking people in the fish. He's you know, turning people, turning the fish stand over and have a guy slip on the ice. Just a pretty fun. And Batman's got a broomstick. He's just taking people out with his giant stick. And then I love the end of the fight. It's just one guy who's standing there against Batman. And you're used to Batman doing the no-look punch to knock the guy out from, that's coming from behind. But this is sort of the inverse of this. The guy decides he's going to turn and run and instead knocks himself out by running into a pole. So, yeah, just so funny. So, so good. There's a lot, like I said, to enjoy from this. The progressive destruction of Bullock's car, you know, him going from the beginning, like just having a little fender bender, and then he smashes into another car. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's chasing after him. His car gets turned into a convertible, and then he smashes into a fire hydrant.
I was gonna say that like sequence of events where the tank goes, fires off, Bullock swerves, somebody else swerves, then the 18 wheeler with the fuel truck spins, Bullock gets the top of his car gets crushed as he drives underneath of it, and then you see the driver running out, and we just see this massive explosion go off. Incredible like chain reaction of events, Rube Goldberg machine of comedy.
Oh, perfectly said. Yeah. I there are some things that I don't like as far as the character models and some of the ways that things look. So that did take me out. There are some, I would say, some ugly looking characters in this, in certain scenes. But I love the fact that we get a different look from Bruce. He's wearing a different tone colored brown suit instead of his standard brown suit.
He's got like a khaki suit this
yeah.
time.
Yeah, he went all khaki instead of the brown and khaki. Similar to, I think, the look that we saw maybe in the last Ra's al Ghul episode. He was rocking a similar suit. He had like a safari looking suit there too. All that to say, I really liked most of the stuff here. But there were a couple things that took me out that I wasn't a fan of the way that people look. So overall, if the action and the comedy didn't work so well, like this, as you mentioned, this is such a visually, there's so many visual gags from mm-hmm. characters' reactions to the things that are happening, to heart boxers, to, you know, the stuff, her hanging onto the Coke bottle straw at the end, like all of that works out so, so, so hilariously and works in with everything that's happening visually. So for that reason, I actually went with an 8 out of 10 for my visuals. Not a perfect score. It's not a perfectly done animated episode. But I still think that more than makes up with the visual timing, the comedy beats, the, you know, the different things that we pointed out as being things that we liked or were funny or added to the visual comedy.
Yeah, I gave it 7 out of 10, so that breaks our streak. But yeah, still, like I said, the Batman was really, I thought, the one downgrade, just his scaling and modeling was just pretty inconsistent, even from shot to shot, I thought. But overall, that's hardly the point, because like you said, it's all of the over the top comedy. It's a lot of stuff. You know, we've talked about that. There's a reason that like the same three explosions get used and reused and reused all the way through to like when they were doing Justice League Unlimited, they're still using like explosions they made on New Batman Adventures. Like it's not easy. And there's a lot of explosions, and I didn't parse out any that looked like they were reused. Mm-mm. So there's a lot of, you know, very over the top, special effects, for lack of a better, word. That's, you know, a real credit to Dong Yang, which is, again, I know Kevin has talked about that on episodes with us in the past, where, you know, you, depending on what studio got his episode, that would inform how he would direct it, how he and his team would board the episode, because they would know, you know, what this studio can do and what they couldn't do. And, you know, you talked about, you know, he wouldn't have given things to you know, to Akam or Dong Yang that he would have given to TMS. I think he used the Clayface episode as an example. But and I think that's a great example of here of, you know, the directing, the storyboard artists and Dong Yang as the animation studio, of like really playing to their strengths for the most part. Yeah, there's some cracks in the armor and some of those close-ups and, and Batman's design and things like that in the episode. But yeah, the backgrounds are tremendous, as you said. All the neon on the billboards at the end are a lot of fun. And all the driving is really well done. Yeah, and all the various visual gags we've already talked about. Just a really strong job all around.
Absolutely. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And one of our dynamic music partners, Miss Lolita Ritmanis, responsible for this week's music. And it's another one of those episodes, I think, that from your opening credits to the time that the title card is revealed, it really sets the tone as to what the episode is going to be, as we have the Harley theme play immediately accompanying things. And the Harley theme is certainly recurring throughout the episode from from the hijinks that occurs. And I love that. That's probably the most recognizable thing, that is the refrain that's played throughout the episode. And but Miss Ritmanis really does look to tailor it to whatever the scene is requiring, whether it's, you know, the opening sequence where you're just kind of setting the mood with her sitting with the doctor, or towards the end as the Harley theme plays. It's sort of as visually you're watching her go from being blown off of the one billboard to the spoon and then launching to the other. It's just playing this sort of dumpy, goofy, off the wall, you know, this, you can't believe this is happening to this, to our main focal point of the episode. And then it's played at the end also, of course, in various different tempos and various different major and minor keys. But that's the major theme that that plays throughout. I do think we get the Batman theme played a couple times. Once, of course, in his reveal at Boxy's location, when he shows up there and saves the day, saves Harley and Veronica from perhaps being done away with. And then when he saves Harley at the end as well, he swoops in and we get the Batman theme once again played. I love the music, the sort of lumbering and pending doom music that's played with the tank arrival and the reveal. It's just these deep sounding horns, and it's sort of like a warning shot. We get it show up and it's just this deep low rumble, and then it continues to sort of almost as if it's like a siren or a warning horn that's going off, you know, alerting that this gigantic piece of war machinery is chasing after our focal point for the episode. So yeah, there's a lot of great music. Harley's theme is incredible. It's another one of those pieces that just, you can hum it all day long if you needed to. It fits the character so well. I feel like it punctuates the episode incredibly well also. But those are the music points that I had as far as that. Did I miss anything that you felt was noteworthy, or if not, what were your overall thoughts?
No, yeah, I think you covered all the big beats. Yeah, I do really love the Harley theme. It's used even in a lot of the action sequences, in the chase sequences, which I think is a great bit there. I enjoyed the fight music in the fish market. I think is really strong as well. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving music another 7 out of 10. So I enjoyed music quite a bit.
Yeah, I just went one tick higher. I went 8 out of 10 when it came to my music score there. It's I think it's really strong. I really, really enjoyed it. And that Harley theme is certainly one of the more memorable pieces that will be stuck in my head for quite a few days, I'd have to imagine. All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which, of course, is going to be our voice acting and actors and actresses. Excuse me. We don't have a huge cast. We have several series regulars, of course, but a couple of guest stars with some of our other characters here involved. Let's go ahead and review those voice actors for this week's episode.
That's right. So we do have a nice size voice cast here. We have a few returning names. Very briefly, we have Henry Pollack II as Scarecrow. Great bit. Great bit to start the episode. Obviously, we're going to save most of our Arlene Sorkin praise for the end, but Yes, that opening scene where our Harley and Dr. Leland, as voiced by Suzanne Stone, are speaking and having this kind of heart to heart about how Harley's on the road to recovery and she can have a normal life. And then just like out of shot, you don't even see him at first. You just hear him shouting, and he's the god of fear, and how dare you manhandle me? I will make you all cower before me. And then he sees Harley and he's just, hello, child, and then goes back to threatening Batman and Robin. It's such a good gag, and Mr. Pollock does a great job with it.
I love he says, "Scream hosannas of anguish to Scarecrow." Like, it's just the most over the top. And I know obviously we have the great Jeffrey Combs ends up being recast as the Scarecrow for our new Batman adventures, but there's just something about that choice for that character to be that over the top thespian. He's delivering it like he's from the stage, a Shakespearean dot monologue, "Cower before me, scream hosannas of anguish to Scarecrow." Like, just, it's so funny. And then of course, like, he pauses and he's just talking normally to Harley, and then he goes again, perfectly written by Paul Dini. And the funny thing, we could have talked about this probably afterwards when we were talking about rewatchability or what have you, but interestingly, like, this episode very much feels like a comic book, and there is a, like, I think believe there is a book adaptation that was done for this, a children's book adaptation for
Oh,
this very
yes.
episode that was done with art by Bruce Timm. But watching this, I was like, this could have been a Paul Dini comic. Like, this plays out exactly like it, even if the images were static that you were watching in little or looking at little panels, like, it would have communicated with the dialogue and the visual gags. It would have communicated just the same, and that's its own unique testament of things there. But yeah, that dialogue of the Scarecrow screaming there was just something that, like, if I was reading this on the page, it would come off exactly the same way.
Absolutely. Yeah, just brilliant job by him. We have the returning Dick Miller as Boxy Bennett once again. Very enjoyable, very just, stereotypical slimy gangster. But a lot of fun hearing him mix it up with some of our cast again. And we also have Franklin Cover or Cover as General Vreeland. Fantastic. Just such a he's hamming it up in the best way possible, and is just from that scene in Gordon's office too, when he says whatever, like, unhand your hostage as he's firing tank missiles at her. He's so over the top and silly, and the bit where it's Mr. Cover, Dick Miller's Boxy, and Bobby Costanzo as Gordon, and they're all like trading lines of what appears to be the same sentence of, like, "I've got you now, you lousy, stinking,
Yep.
crazy clown lady," or whatever. Like, those three going, beat for beat for beat there is a great bit of timing and a great bit of editing as well.
So good. Yeah, the just his performance as the general, speaking of Mr. Cover, is just, he is asked to be over the top and animated, and I love that he comes in like guns blazing initially, and then he like calms down, and you get the like trick little beat where he just needs Gordon to get out of the room so that he can call for a code red, which apparently code red just means he gets a tank that he can drive around in.
Just one tank. I assume maybe there's another guy in the tank with him, because he like does the thing where he bangs on the lid at one
Yeah,
point.
yeah. That yeah, you would imagine there might be, but I just love that he has the authority as the general to just get a tank deli like, "Hey, I'm gonna take the tank out for a little spin, all right? I'll be back in a little bit here."
It's incredible. It's just such a,
So funny.
yeah, at the yeah, again, great timing, great job by Mr. Cover as well there. But yes, we do also briefly have Bob Hastings as Commissioner Gordon, and then playing a big part in this episode. Probably, I guess she had birds of a feather. This is probably 1 and 1A for Mary Lou Henner as Veronica. She's great. She's so funny and just so exasperated. I love the bit of her and and her taking Bruce shopping, and then just every just her over the top reaction. It is a lot of screaming, but I just think she does so well playing off of course Kevin Conroy and of course Arlene Sorkin as well. But maybe my favorite Veronica Vreeland episode, or at least one of her best, along with Birds of a Feather, maybe.
Yeah, as you've said, she only gets a couple of starring roles, but this is a pretty good one. And obviously she gets to kind of play the damsel in distress. But I think that what's interesting to me is they went so far as to decide to give her sort of a bit of a redeeming quality there, where she decides she makes this promise to Harley, which feels like it could just be the rich person empty promise. She's initially trying to bribe her, like, hey, I'll give you money, just let me go. And Harley's not interested in that. So that causes her to kind of look at the situation that Harley's in, and even for Veronica to have a little bit of sympathy for her and say, you know what? All I care about is just getting home safe. If you get me home safe, as long as I'm alive, I'm not going to press charges against you. And then at the end, when Harley's kind of accepted her fate and she's back at Arkham and feels like she's back to square one, that's when, you know, Dr. Vreeland, what's her name? I keep forgetting it.
Leland.
It's Vreeland and Leland. I was like, it rhymes with Vreeland.
Like famous Detroit Tigers manager Jim Leland.
Jim Leland. Should be that easy. Yes. So when Dr. Leland breaks the news to her, she's like, well, Veronica didn't press any charges against you. It's like, oh, that's awesome. Like they didn't have to include that little bit there, but it also just lends to show you that Veronica Vreeland is not just your typical like ritzy rich person that has no morals or has, you know, that stereotypical rich person character. It's like, look, they have she has a little bit of a heart too. That works out well for this. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now she's great there. And so rounding out our main cast, I think we're going to save our villain for last because it's just such her episode. But obviously rounding things out, we do, of course, want to talk about Lauren Lester as Robin and Kevin Conroy as Batman. Like you said, it's like, as we've alluded to, a lot of this, as much as it is Harley's episode and Mary Lou Henner, it's Veronica's episode. These bookend scenes of Batman sort of being there for Harley and like I said, kind of providing like the emotional heart of the episode. If you're looking for like total quantity of minutes, this is probably on the lower end for a Kevin Conroy Batman the Animated Series episode. But when you talk about quality, that final scene in Arkham with him and Harley is just wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even as I said, even when he's Bruce at the beginning and he's knocking on the door and he's trying to like stop this out of control train before it leaves the station, it's you can tell he's showing some compassion. He's trying to have heart. And the very end, he shows up with a dress and he's being very kind. Like there's kindness in his voice, there's gentleness in his voice. There's all these things that you typically don't associate with Batman when he's interacting with his villains. And it's just a testament, of course, not only to the writing, but the fact that the late great Mr. Conroy was able to evoke that emotion and communicate that effectively through the dialogue. So yeah, the moments that he has, of course, the cool moment where he gets to interrupt Boxy also, where Boxy says, you know, I'm the one who makes the the calls around here, got it. And then Batman answers him with a got it, and then proceeds to pick the whole crew apart. So yeah, there's not a lot for him to do. So not a lot of meat on the bone as far as volume is concerned. But I think he of course made the most of those bits where he did have to communicate some more gentle, kinder version of Batman.
Absolutely. And yeah, that just leaves us with our main eventer here, Arlene Sorkin as Harley. Oh my goodness, this is, you know, I was debating in my head, and we'd probably have to just go back at the end and look at scores to figure out which this or Harlequinade I like better. She doesn't have a song in this one, so I think Harlequinade maybe holds a more special place in my heart. And obviously we haven't reviewed Mad Love yet. So there's other great Arlene Sorkin performances, but again, she's so funny in this episode. And she also, like you feel sorry for her the whole time because she's freaking out. And like for all the reasons you already talked about, like, you know, she's freaking out. She doesn't understand what's happening. She's scared. And she's just the mania of what she's going through. I think she portrays that so well, of just the general stress. I think this might have my favorite single line, though, which is where she attacks Batman at the end. And then very matter of fact, it says, "I'm having a bad day."
Yeah,
I repeat that all the time. So that's this might be the most iconic Harley. This is, you know, it's one of three probably most iconic Harley performances by Miss Sorkin, if I may be so bold.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it other than just it's wonderful. It's, you know, it's a great roller coaster of emotions that she goes on. You do get a little bit of the, obviously she's playing a character that is clinically insane or was clinically insane at the start of the episode. And she begins to just crack throughout the entire episode, to the point where, as you said, it sort of culminates with this dialogue that she has with Batman at the very end. But it's great because you kind of see her, and the whole thing is that she's done the work that's at least convinced the people at Arkham that she's cured. So if that was true, you're either, if it wasn't true and they let her out, you're making the people at Arkham look like idiots, or in the, you would have to show or communicate in some form or fashion that she isn't as insane as, let's say, the Joker. And I think Ms. Sorkin's performance gets that point across, where she's just there. She's having this monologue talking about, she's believing that she can change. And then, you know, all of a sudden the alarms go off and she's transported back to thinking that she's a criminal and has to act like one. So, but some of the downbeats and the conversations that she has with Veronica, and even the conversations that she has with Boxy, and it's from start to finish an incredible episode. And you know, it's probably, if you wanted to see Ms. Sorkin's best work, I would be hard pressed to put another episode up is like, hey, this is better. I think you're right. I think I think you know, having her sing is probably would have been the only thing that could have taken this to the stratosphere per se, but it's really good. She's fantastic and sorely missed. Certainly, you know, anybody that voices Harley after this, of course, is going to have some giant shoes that will probably never be able to be filled at this point. So it's nice to be able to go back and watch a performance at this level from the person that was quite literally the story was, or the character was created for, and see just exactly what Harley's voice truly sounds like. So A plus from Sorkin's performance.
Yeah, couldn't have said any better myself. So I think for all those reasons, I felt almost like I had no choice but to give this another 10 out of 10.
Love it. Yep, I am right there with you, my dude. Couldn't give it anything else but a perfect 10 out of 10. Well, so yeah, that will bring us to the... Whoa, that's... That sound there that you just heard is, in fact, the bonus point sound. And it's not for me this week, Liam, so it must be for you.
That's right. First time in a while, I think I've had a bonus point. But yeah, mine is one we often, I think, give out bonus points for here on the show. And that is the title card for this episode. Most of the title cards were designed by Eric Radomski, and I think drawn by various artists. But this one is so iconic. You know, Harley with the big hat. I almost wish we had gotten her in this outfit in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
She got like this big red hat and like the red jacket and the skirt and everything, like, and that the hyenas wrapping the leash around her legs and rushing off to either side of her. I mean, this one's so iconic that they made a statue out of it. There's a DC Direct collectible statue of her, even though she doesn't actually appear in the episode. In this outfit, there is a statue made of this. So I think this is also probably in the running for one of the you know, five or 10 maybe most iconic title cards of the whole series. So I just wanted to give an extra point for that.
Love that. That's well deserving. We love the title cards for this series. Brothers Warner and or Detective Comics Comics, when are you going to drop the title cards as a collectible, like coffee table book or something? Like, you guys are leaving money on the table. Hire us, please. All right, Liam. Well, that will bring us, now that we've totaled everything up, totaling up my scores, I end up with a 36 out of 40, meaning back-to-back weeks now. We have had a top pick here for our episodes. What about you?
Yeah, I am just a couple points lower at 35 out of 40, but still a tremendous episode, still a just a absolute blast. And I mean, as we talk about rewatchability, I mean, it's already in the top pick section, as you mentioned, based on your score. But I mean, double thumbs up. This is it's a masterpiece of an episode, one of the best of the whole series. And it's pretty relevant to Harley Quinn. Like we said, this is even though she is kind of on her own for a lot, and she gets the spotlight certainly in other episodes before this, this is her solo act. I mean, we see Poison Ivy for a second at the end for that little gag, but there's no Joker, there's no Ivy. This is really her episode, and obviously, as you talked about, there's, you know, this is the building blocks for major motion pictures and her own, you know, animated series and hundreds and hundreds of issues of critically acclaimed comic books. Like, this is one of those giant building blocks for what the character would become later on. So this is not only relevant to the DCAU, it's relevant to DC. Like, it's relevant to the history of the character and the history of the entire comic making and superhero organization or superhero industry as it went on was this first Harley solo outing. So massively important. Maybe the easiest double thumbs up we've had for a rewatchability question in a while.
Yeah, I don't have any reason to say why this shouldn't be two thumbs up. It's important to the series. It's a great showcase. It's a funny episode. It's Paul Dini and Kevin Altieri working together. It's tremendous. Definitely advise going out of your way. If you haven't seen this episode in a while, put it on. It's on your favorite streaming app. I'm sure you can find it somewhere streaming on the internet if you don't have a streaming app to watch it on, or pull out the DVDs or dust off the VHS or whatever. Pull it out and give it another viewing. It's a fun one. Certainly worth the time, and you'll be chuckling along with us just as we were this week. All right, Liam, let's go ahead and wrap things up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Now we get to the part where we talk about how you can support the podcast. If you'd like to support us, there's several different ways to do so. Easiest way to do so is subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. If you do subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, the next step would be to leave us a review. A 5-star review would be greatly appreciated, especially if you listen on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. If you do listen on Apple Podcasts and you want to take an even further step, leave a little blurb, tell people what you like about the podcast. Heck, if we see it and read it on the air and you live within the U.S., the continental United States, we'll send you a thank you gift just for stopping and taking the time to do so. You can also support the podcast by checking out the show notes. There's a link to our store to pick up a piece of merchandise to support the podcast. Or if you want to become a monthly supporter, like several of our listeners already do, you can do so as well. There's a link for both of those in the show notes of the episode. Of course, you can also support us by following us on Instagram and on Twitter/X at DCAU Review, as Liam noted at the top of the program. You can also, of course, interact with us on there. We have people every week who send us their thoughts on the episode. They slide into our DMs and tell us their memories of the show. It's one of, if not the best thing about doing this, is getting people's feedback. We have people that feel like friends at this point that send us Christmas cards and are willing to take time out to say kind things to us and share their memories. We've had some real great things shared over the last couple of weeks, especially with these particular episodes. I think like us, these episodes, because of how great they are and how memorable they are, a lot of people have some nostalgic feelings about these ones, Liam. And it's been great to hear and read people's thoughts on these over the last several months here. However, we are going to be turning the calendar page. Well, actually, that's not true. We're close to turning the calendar page, and next week will be the fifth Saturday of the month. And Liam, so the fifth Saturday of the month, this being, of course, the month of March, lands on March the 30th, which means from that date, if you count 2 days forward, it is, of course, the Day of Fools. Mm-hmm. April Fool's Day falls on that following Monday. So next week, it snuck up on us somehow already. Next week will be our April Fool's Day episode. Whew. And boy, we have an interesting one to discuss next week. It's going to be lots of fun.
That is right, Cal. And you'll have to stay tuned to our social medias for the exact episode. But we can tell you one thing for sure, and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be extreme. We will be visiting for the first and, if we're honest, only time in our show's entire run, if I had to guess. We will be looking at a very exciting episode of a classic X-Men cartoon next week for the April Fool's review. 1 week only, one time a year only, and we have not dipped our toes into the mutant side of the Marvel animated universe just yet. So excited to take a look at that next week.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that people are going to be talking about the X-Men and that they are hashtags, and we are not trying to take advantage of any sort of social media engagement with our opportunity to do so.
Nope, not trying to get any early, not trying to capitalize on any SEO from the new X-Men cartoon. We're not trying to capitalize on the constant fervor of the need for updates on this Deadpool and Wolverine movie that's coming out this summer. No, purely coincidental.
That's right.
We decided to do an X-Men thing this year. So stay tuned for the exact of what and where and why we'll be reviewing it. But yes, we will be reviewing something, a classic X-Men cartoon next week, and that's another one that people we're the outliers. We didn't really grow up watching an X-Men cartoon, or we did, but it was one of the later ones. But that classic X-Men cartoon, if in fact that is what wins the poll. Boy, people go nuts for that show. Obviously, it's why they're bringing it back after almost 30 years. So excited to see what the listeners pick for us to listen to. And it will be very, as I said, exciting, extreme, and a third, Excelsior. Excelsior.
I'm just excited that we get to break out our Stan Lee impersonations. Our annual Stan Lee impersonation.
Even if we did Star Wars, I think we'd still have to work in Stan Lee on the April Fool's every year. I think that's just a rule now.
It's part of the gimmick. We have to pull it out. Don't miss it. You won't want to miss it. It's going to be a blast, as it is each and every year. I can't wait to do that with you. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the very next silly April Fool's edition of the DCAU review.
Bye-bye.